Hello and welcome. I want to talk in this video about male sexual desire. The urge to procreate, it's the strongest drive a man has, along with his instinct for survival. And when we speak of love, we're talking neurochemical attraction, you know, oxytocin, serotonin, vasopressin. And these chemicals, they drive pair bonding. First we experience desire, then attachment. And being together with someone, it feels good. There's a sense of closeness. Nature has a way of keeping us together even when desire levels off. And love hurts, and it hurts for a reason. Now, research suggests that the area of the brain that processes pain, it crosses over with those areas that regulate emotional pain. And to survive, we needed the cooperation of the tribe. And it's suggested that the emotional pain we experience from separation may have been an adaptive strategy to aid us in survival. In the pleasure center of the brain, as pair bonding develops, blood flow increases to that area. And it's the same part of the brain regulating OCD. Serotonin levels, they drop. And it's the same process that occurs with obsessive compulsive disorders. We become preoccupied with thoughts of our partner. We idealize. Hence why so many men so willingly sign away their rights when they sign a marriage contract. And once burned, will simply project this idealism onto the next available female. Oh no, this time it will be different. No, my princess would never hurt me. What we have is special. And with the male reluctance to face reality, it's all too easy for parasites to go from host to host. Because men, they project and idealize women constantly. And it's men that uphold traditional relationships and all the storybook romance. And men with this mindset, they're open to being manipulated. And such men are easy prey. Now, men need to understand the world in which they're living in. Now, a woman accuses a man. Her word is seen as truth. And the definition of sexual assault, it's now broadening to include verbal consent for every stage of a consensual sex act. Now, a woman can withdraw consent after the fact, and that man has no recourse other than to prove verbal consent. In due process for males, they're being stripped away. Just look at college campuses or the military for evidence of this. So understand the next time you're standing at the bar or in the club or at the gym or on the street, that the sexual playing field that hasn't been leveled, it's been obliterated. Yet look at how universities can accuse and sentence males based solely on the word of a woman. Now, whether a sex act actually took place is irrelevant. The male gaze is enough. If a woman is drunk, you're a predator. If a man looks in a woman's direction and he's not deemed conventionally attractive, he's a violator of that woman's space. And if a woman feels uncomfortable with a man because that male is what's deemed as socially awkward, she can have him arrested and humiliated. And we've seen this. If men converse in a free and masculine manner, those men are now misogynists, contributing to a culture of female objectification and oppression. And we're standing on cracking ice, and women are holding the hammer. And in this culture, on these terms, a relationship based on mutual trust, it's not possible. So something's got to give. And when it does, it's going to be in her favor. Have you ever engaged in a dialogue with a man and challenged his beliefs? Even in a very indirect way in relation to women. You see it, the walls go up. To preserve their psychological comfort, they raise the bar to extremes. To preserve cognitive dissonance. I've had men compare the female experience to that of Auschwitz survivors. The male identity, it's dependent on preserving this, to prevent the loss of female approval, of mother's approval. And for many men, sex is so rare that they'll accept all manner of deprivation, of humiliation, and reprisals, you know, from females for crimes they never committed, that were never committed in the first place. You can picture it, a sad bull being led by the brass ring to a trough of putrid leftovers. Yeah, the game is rigged, but men keep playing it. Just rinse and repeat. How far have men let their standards fall? Stop and actually look. Look around you. Look at what men are settling for. What have we become? Whether that man is involuntarily celibate, or a pickup artist, or a serial monogamist, whatever. Those men's behavior and preferences are dictated solely by women, and what the media dictates to us that we must find attractive. Oh, that girl, she's not fat. No, just accept her for who she is, you pig. No, that girl isn't a slut. No, she's sexually empowered. So just let her sow her oats, and then marry her at the age of 30, and just count yourself lucky, you lowly male. I mean, the game isn't only rigged, and this is an open war on the male sex. Now, birth control methods, where women can trap a man or accuse a man at any time of fathering her children, where even if the child is not his, he still pays child support. And if he can't manage payments, he's then sentenced to jail. Yep, no-fault divorces. Exorbitant alimony and child support that exceed men's income. Right across the board, men are being disadvantaged. All the way from healthcare to workplace fatalities. And those who shame a male for not entering a minefield, the onus is on those people to provide valid reasoning why he should. Now, men need to remove the onus off their own shoulders, and they need to stop reinforcing the messages others impose on them. The reality is what it is, and this is your life. The men of this generation, they need to be inherently selfish. The example needs to be set and followed if men are ever going to find their voice. And it starts with you. Because sex equals control. Socially and politically. And it's a very effective tactic in implementing social control and conformity. It always has been. From an evolutionary perspective, reproductive access to females, it was always for that of a select grouping of males. Females that ovulate in sync, limiting reproductive access, and competition for access to these women, it would have been fierce. Because fathering children, it would guarantee increased status within the tribe, and also better odds of survival, so there was a lot at stake. And females, they were assured of the best genetics for their children. And of course, the goal for the female, in terms of reproduction, is to increase her influence, socially, politically, financially. And a male standing is her ticket to achieving this. And her children she sees as an extension of herself. And those children guarantee provision from the tribe. And today, with women being able to manipulate their fertility with various birth control methods, and a legal system that supports and encourages single mothers, women can be impregnated by the fittest males, while the beta male picks up the check, along with the taxpayer. And these beta providers, these serial monogamists, they need to realize this. They are a utility. And if they don't like it, take it up with Mother Nature. Because the only way this behavior can ever change is by men having a frank and honest conversation about female nature. And this is yet to happen. Except for online. But even then, there are only a very select few who will question with an open mind. And not allow their protective instincts to take over. So, still our evolutionary drives, they dictate our behavior. But we can't change what we don't identify. Yep, but let's delve deeper. I mean, this attraction or addiction for women, however we term it, it's a valid want. Because if you think about touch, you know, the sensation of touch, it's the first sense we experience. And touch itself is said to be the most effective means of expressing emotion. Yeah, it's dependent, of course, on context, but the most powerful form of communication we have is touch. And it's the first sensation we experience. And that first sensation is the vibration of our mother's heartbeat inside the womb. And this is the basis of attachment theory. A mother's touch, this relationship and sense of attachment that children have with their mother, it has a bearing on early socialization. And you add in environmental and social factors, and you can have a securely attached adult or a ticking time bomb. And unfortunately, all too often, we seem to be generating the latter. And this epidemic of single mothers and the infrastructure that supports and condones it, it's a literal conveyor belt of dysfunction. And if you look at people, you can gauge different personality types and their level of attachment, simply from observation. And you can also gain an insight into their early experiences, body language, or how they use verbal language, their level of responsiveness, and so on. You see, a securely attached adult, they have a positive outlook of themselves and on life in general. And they have the capacity to experience intimacy. On the other hand, someone who's experienced anxiety in early life, they seek validation. They can become overly dependent on a partner. And they're very insecure. They have trust issues. Dismissive personality types, they close off. They avoid any form of attachment altogether. And they reject others first. And they repress their emotions and they won't even acknowledge them. And then there's others who simply view themselves as not deserving of intimacy and they tend to self-punish. But the danger being that without a solid perception of self, defining personal boundaries, it's always going to be an issue. A man will end up seeking validation externally and he becomes reliant on others and he forgoes his rights. But the most painful thing is, once you have clarity, there is no going back. I mean, what you longed for, what you competed for, it wasn't real to begin with. And it was founded on a lie, and that lie was called love. And the real truth being that love is not reciprocal. Not in this current climate of bias against males. Mutual trust, it simply can't exist between the sexes, not in this current environment. And any man with a vestige of self-respect, he won't allow himself to backslide and compromise. But this feeling of loss, it's still real. And in terms of sensation, we have receptors in our skin. And when they're stimulated, our stress levels, they drop. And oxytocin kicks in, which causes us to feel a sense of attachment to others. And we touch ourselves constantly, we rub our face, we rub our neck, touch our arms. And it's a calming mechanism, it lowers cortisol and stress levels. Like when you look at couples, you can always tell a new couple because they can't keep their hands off one another. But touching decreases as relationships go on, significantly on the part of the female. But what signals a strong pair bond is how partners respond to being touched. And if it's not reciprocal, one partner is being deprived and it's not a mutually beneficial relationship. And many men, they go through their whole lives hardly ever being touched, even if they are in a relationship. They have their allotted time for copulation, dependent on the female partner's schedule or a mood. But other than that, they go without. And experiencing touch, it's a rare commodity for many men. And males have been taught that their touch and even their presence is unwanted. So they internalize this. And this funnels into self-hatred. And it makes men more susceptible to being manipulated and more willing to lower the standards. You know, they'll take what they can get and be thankful for it, you know, even if it means sacrificing their integrity and their self-respect. And yeah, I mean, technology, it's played a large role in this, you know, this lack of interpersonal connection. You know, cell phones. I mean, cell phones mean we spend more time staring into screens than engaging with people, which means we communicate less in person, and we're directly marketed to online, so our perspectives, they're reinforced, they're hardly ever challenged, and we become less willing to challenge the status quo, and we become more reliant on the government, on the media, on technology, and so on, and less questions will be asked, and we'll become more malleable. And we'll seek to fulfill our needs with new technology, with material possessions, and so on. But touch, I mean, touch is vital to human development and well-being. And if you don't believe me, I mean, look at Russian orphanages. Look at the horrific effect that neglect has on these children. I mean, look at premature babies. I mean, when they're given touch therapy, they gain more weight. I mean, touch is encouraging to school children. You know, they feel more involved in the class process just from a pat on the back or from interacting physically with classmates. Of course, even suggesting this will likely get you branded as a pedophile, you know, so criminalized as a male touch. Even sports teams, you know, sports teams, they achieve to a higher level when they incorporate touching. You know, banging chests, slapping hands, interacting physically. I mean, we have a basic inner drive to connect with touch, and to deny that is to deprive ourselves. I mean, you look now at, what are they called, you know, cuddle parlors, where men pay to hold a woman, or pay to be held. I mean, look at what it's come to. You know, I often wonder how deep a man has to fall inside of himself before he starts to scream, you know, crawl and scratch his way back out. And tearing his eyes out so he can see again. How far have we fallen? And with mate selection, you know, when it comes to physical attractiveness, you know, we're hardwired to show preference to more attractive people. You look at it, mothers, nurses, judges, they all show preference to those with more asymmetrical features. And universally, across all cultures, we favour those who are more physically appealing. Now, of course, there's more to play at here. More a play like, say, social proofing. You know, a woman judges a male based on his status within a group, you know, how other females relate to and regard him. And all this is a way to gauge a male's status and his reproductive capability. You know, if an attractive woman regard him highly, then he's then a viable option. And sexual guilt, I mean, it's an effective means of social control. You know, if society trains us or trains us to deprive ourselves, or if we're deprived by other means, then we're more susceptible to compromising our ideals, more willing to compete and sacrifice for a basic human need. But what often happens, and it's brutal when it does, and I've seen it, is that instead of accepting guilt or identifying it, people instead punish themselves. You know, it's easier than identifying what's really causing these feelings of guilt. And I've seen men engage in all manner of self-punishment to avoid this. You know, they'll cut themselves off from society for years at a time. They'll self-mutilate, they'll self-medicate. They'll destroy themselves any way that they can to avoid accepting their shame. And this then becomes a cycle. You know, they feel shame for their avoidant behaviours. Then to avoid the shame, they escalate the behaviour, which compounds the feelings of shame. And they can't give voice to their shame for fear of having to face it. So they suffer in silence. Far too many men walk this path alone. You know, in research, it states that the human race was born from 80% of females, but only 40% of males. So it stands to reason that there will always be males that go without access to sex. And this can be devastating psychologically for men. You know, if they project blame back onto themselves, as opposed to seeing the truth for what it is. Now, in competition for reproductive access, is defined by the same terms as they've always been. I mean, in order to be regarded as viable by the female, the male needs to possess status or resources or be asymmetrical in appearance or have social proofing and so on. Whilst at the same time, the risks for participating in this mating competition, they're becoming increasingly severe. The loss of acquired status and resources, the loss of self-worth, the restriction of access to sex, the loss of freedoms, the reposition of one's children, and so on. Yeah, there was a quote that was it was attributed to Hunter S. Thompson, and he was referring to the media, but if we apply it to marriage, it would read, "The marriage business is a cruel and shallow money trench, a long plastic hallway where thieves and pimps run free, and good men die like dogs." And Neo Unplugged, he did a recent video regarding Valentine's Day and the revenue generated from that one day. And it's an obscene amount of money. Yeah, men on this day, they're paying for access to sex. They're pedestalizing women. And I shake my head. Yeah, I talk in my videos about the experience of men. And I can because I've walked that path. And if I talk of men punishing themselves, and the pain that comes from that, the isolation and the wreckage that ensues, I can because I've lived it. You know, the loss of self, the compromises, the sacrifices, the longing. You know, I speak as someone who experiences pain. But the majority of men, they're just keeping their head above water. And we're all navigating in an environment where the stakes and the risks are increasing for males. So, this is not the time for bravado. Yet we all hurt. We all feel pain. And we all have basic needs that need to be met. And to deny this is to deny our humanity. Now, in George Orwell, he wrote, "If you want a vision of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever." Well, we've had a lifetime of being browbeaten with hurtful messages, all to make men compliant. And it starts with young boys. You know, they have their humanity stamped out of them, conditioned and set on a path for a lifetime of deprivation. Yet when the risks and the negatives outweigh the positives, when the food is so toxic you can't keep it down, when the truth is founded on a lie, you need to make a choice. And man's worst enemy has always been himself. But now it's time to greet the menace.